What if reclaiming your pleasure was the most healing thing you could do for yourself? In this intimate conversation, I speak to Coral Osborne, who opens the door to her unique story. As someone who started sex work to fund her startup, she's always been seen as a very open and hypersexual woman, and yet she found herself disconnected from her own pleasure. She then embarked on a journey of full reclamation of her own power, sovereignty, and spiritual aliveness through embodiment, through studies, through practices, and she's going to share the tools that she's been using to get herself back to full aliveness and the sense of own divine power within in this episode. You are listening to the Feminine Power Podcast, your portal into embodiment, feminine awakening, and the true power of your life force, sexual energy. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, founder of Feel, a global platform for feminine embodiment, and a coach for women ready to live with magnetism, love, and full aliveness. If you're ready to rise, you're in the right place. Follow the show and let's begin. Before we begin, I would love to hear a little bit about your journey and your story. What made you step on this really brave and beautiful and powerful path?
Sure. So I was always very curious about sex. I think a large part of that was because it was so stigmatized in my household growing up. My mother was a social worker. And she had been a victim as well. So she went the route of like kind of sexual preservation, and sex wasn't to be had outside of being in love. And, you know, boys under the age or in their adolescent years were kind of like dangerous, like you weren't going to get anything from them. And then I sort of split. I rebelled when I was a teenager, became very promiscuous. And that was an empty promiscuity, which I mistook for liberation. It was a people-pleasing tendency. That eventually led me to getting into sex work when I was looking to fund my startup in my mid-20s. And I was always very curious about that. And I found the power dynamic super interesting. And it wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be. And that was the first moment I kind of realized, wow, there is so much more to sex than just sex. Like, what are people looking for by taking sex out? What does that mean? You know, whether that was validation, whether that was real connection, I got to experience various archetypes of men. And that's way before I looked at my own stuff. Then in my personal life and my own relationships, I was completely disconnected. I would dissociate completely because sex work was insidious in the way where, you know, I was having performative sex. When it came time to connecting with a partner, I would not know how to do that. And I would kind of like reach this intimacy impasse, which I didn't know how to shut off. And then it wasn't until I was doxxed, which means outed, for my history and sex work, that I just had this incredible revelation. All the things I'd feared happening happened. And on the other side of that was a bit of a sexual and spiritual rebirth where I was like, oh, I'm living my life in fear, just like that was being mimicked in sex. That was being mimicked in my personal relationships, in my career and everything. And that's when I realized that sexuality and our relationship to sex is kind of a through line to our relationship with ourselves and with everyone in our lives and our relationship to life. So I went back to school and I became a certified sexologist. And then that was a very clinical program that I initially took. And then I was like, wait a second. Okay, so I know all this stuff, but I'm coming up against like faking orgasms and all of this in my relationships. I'm like, I'm not embodying this. Like, there's something else here, which is when I realized how intrinsic spirituality is to sexuality as well. So then I started exploring, you know, embodiment practices. I worked with, I am still working with Dr. Saida Desilet on her psychosexual embodiment program, as well as I went to Somatic Institute and did their coaching program. I've started exploring Tantra. And I really think it's this kind of never-ending quest. This path is definitely the seeker's path. And, you know, I'm nowhere near the finish line. But what happened was concurrently with healing myself and not just my relationship to sex, that was kind of the portal, But I started realizing my abilities and gifts with healing others, namely men, because there was this kind of innate trust that they had with me, given how stigmatized my background was. So I am able to help them with the de-shamifying piece, which is, you know, really, really a difficult part for men.
I personally adore women who are brave and open and really own their story. And it is very often not the case for people who have had experience with sex work. A lot of people are so ashamed and shy, while actually owning the part of the story and also looking beyond the societal shame and seeing what it truly is really powerful. And I wonder if you would share, how did this experience of seeing the truth and the depth beyond what people really think about such work affected your path? And if there is anything powerful there that you want to share?
Yeah, well, I mean, like in any profession, there's all different types of people and all different types of reasons and incentives why people get into the line of work they do. We can look at, you know, the entertainment industry, for example. You've got the Harvey Weinsteins and you've got, you know, the better reputable documentarians that are making profound, monumental work. You know, it's very, very nuanced, but unfortunately in Western society, we do have this kind of blanket interpretation of sex work is for like lazy women or women with daddy issues or women with trauma. And God forbid you would enter it autonomously. Like, I didn't have capital T trauma. I mean, we all have trauma, lowercase t, right? But I didn't have that. I had a really great family. There's all these micro reasons why I could say it led me to that, but it really was a decision that I made and a decision that I continued to make. And interestingly, the shame came up for me because I didn't feel shame. I was like, what's wrong with me? Because I don't feel the things that I'm told I'm supposed to feel. I don't feel bad about this. Also, which is something that confuses people a lot, is I never did it when I was in a relationship. And I never told partners. So that was a whole other piece because I was constantly in fear when I had a boyfriend. But I have never cheated on a partner in my life, right? And I can't tell you how many civilian women and men I know that have definitely experienced infidelity and have cheated on their partners as well. So that's a major misconception that I just want to call out. And then I think the interesting piece with sex workers is like, I do really see a couple, like two major subtypes. So you kind of get the disempowered, hiding in the shadows, living this double life, which ironically I find is more like prevalent in like a city like Los Angeles, right? Where it's like influencers and but no one really knows what they do and blah, 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 blah. No one's talking about it, but they kind of tacitly accept it. It's just like, look the other way. And then in New York, for example, it's like a very rah, rah, I'm so liberated, you know, like kind of a calloused approach. Neither one are great because neither one of them are like, you feel like you need to choose a side. Like you're either hiding in the shadows or you need to wear it like it's your only identity. And like, it's not our only identities, right? So I really dislike the glorification of sex work, just like I dislike the vilification of it. I mean, we all contain multitudes. There's so much more to people than just that. So as soon as you start hammering in, I'm like, oh, my identity is a sex worker, then I have like strong aversions to that. But I will say, you know, the empowered sex workers that I've met, a lot of them are like published authors, like New York Times bestsellers authors, or they've gone on to be renowned sex therapists and do incredible work. Because the big part there, another misconception, is when you're addressed, when you have to meet so much pushback from society, you face so much stigma, especially if you're out or you're outed, like kind of everything that no one would ever anticipate or expect to deal with in a lifetime, you're dealing with. And in relationships, you can't avoid it because it would come out eventually. So it does kind of allow you to accumulate wisdom by rapid fire there. And I would say, I wouldn't have said it at the time, that is a gift. So you develop a lot of skills, a lot of resilience. And yeah, those are what I would say the major misconceptions of that work is. But there's another big piece, which is what I like to call provider privilege or escort entitlement, where it's hard to switch gears from like those hard, staunch boundaries that you have with clients into relationships. So there's, you know, lots of people think, oh, sex workers like don't have boundaries. They're like, they have the most hardcore boundaries where it's really hard to switch off in interpersonal relationships. And this wasn't the case with me, but a lot of women will also take the like, feel like they need to be compensated for their time, right? Like my time is precious and it's valued exponentially high. Or if you're like me, then it was like, it's so incredible if someone finally accepts you of the opposite sex when you're in a relationship that you kind of just give and you suck at receiving because you're like, oh, finally someone's going to like accept me and my past and who I was. So I'm just going to give them everything in the world, even if it's undeserved. So there's a lot of like contradictory pieces there. And it's truly fascinating. I recently took a poll in the sex work group that I run. There's over like 500 members in it. On what their relationship to pleasure was. And it's really interesting to see how some women really gatekeep their pleasure and completely shut off. And that was certainly the case for me. And others sort of fetishize it and they can kind of relinquish control because they feel like, oh, it's not a personal relationship. I can just let go. So there's truly so many layers that kind of mimic the sex work, like this, the provider client relationship is kind of a hyper-focused metaphor or analogy for real life relationships. You get to see things and interpersonal dynamics play out in rapid fire settings. And that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I had these conversations with quite a few amazing women that I really, really respect who had either were sex workers or are sex workers now. And all of them, I must say, had this same thing that you described, kind of disassociation from pleasure or gatekeeping pleasure, while themselves being these goddesses of pleasure, goddesses of giving, creating pleasure, like being the absolute experts of that as those who give that and create, but not so much for themselves. And some of them found their journey again through spirituality and through tantric practices to really, really reclaim pleasure in their bodies for themselves. And some are still going through that process. But that is no different to women who are not sex workers. It's literally happens to all of us. A lot of us have this conditioning of being like, oh, I need to please my lover. I need to learn to do the best blow job and like to do the strip dance and like to be all this, like give. And not so much, oh, how do I feel good? How do I open up? It's a universal theme. And yeah, how did you address that?
I'm still addressing it. Example, like I just got back from a 9-day retreat with my mentor, Dr. Saida Desai, who also runs the program, the Embodied Psychosexual Program. You know, when I started that program for several months, it was weekly Zoom sessions, and I was getting extremely frustrated because the whole part is that she preaches is that the integrity piece in the embodiment is missing in this work. You know, if you're a clinical sexologist, I can't tell you how many sexologists are pretty much inactive, if not asexual. And it's all in their cerebral brains. And I was that. And I was like, I don't want to be that. And also for my own life, because I've had glimpses of the transformative power of connection and orgasm. And I know the potential that lies there. So I was like, I want to see what's on the other side of that. But when I just did this retreat, this 9-day training retreat. Part of our retreat or our training is the Jade Egg practice. And when I first started that months ago, I would get really frustrated because the premise of it is you're sipping in the egg. And it can sometimes take you weeks, if not months, to get there. It's not like forcing things in. And if we look at how we have sex, it's like friction-based. It's high sympathetic state. It's one-dimensional as opposed to multi-dimensional. And it's all about patience, which is the key to embodiment. So that was a pretty transformative experience just that this past week. I also had an incredible, my first heartgasm, which I would have laughed and rolled my eyes at if you told me this last year that this was a thing. But the sexual reflexology and the vagal nerves and the connection between our cervix part is a real thing. And that was as profound as, or more profound than like me doing like a psychedelic induced like journey work that I've done, right? That was extremely heart opening. So that just kind of reinstilled the faith that I have in this work. And to speak more about my quest on my own path, I'm doing ISTA training this summer in Andalusia. and I'm doing orgasmic hypnosis training in Berlin. And I'm going back to Greece to train with Dr. Saida and Erin Michael, her partner, who's a sexological body worker and coach as well, to deepen my own journey. So it's never ending. And that's the fun part. It's, you know, like I said, it mimics spirituality and the seeker mindset. Always have the beginner's mindset. And that's the exciting part for me, is the more I get closer to my own embodiment and my own fulfillment and see what the potential is there, the more I feel capable of holding others into leading them to the same. I don't see how it's possible otherwise. And sadly, in the Western world, with a lot of sex therapists and gynecologists, I read a stat the other day that it takes 15 gynecologists to get you one that will actually address like pleasure anatomy. If you go there and you're like, I'm numbing out. They, including that was my experience. I think it took me about six. They're just not trained in this. People can talk about sex a lot more comfortably now, but you know, they're not talking about the embodiment piece. They're talking about like, oh, how to give a great blowjob, you know, like how to give and like what anal lubes to use. And it's like, none of that matters. It's kind of like putting lipstick on a pig unless you have that foundational embodiment.
Yeah. This is something that really makes me sad when I go to like any sex tech conferences, or in London, we have like communities that are focused around the innovation and involvement in sexual wellness. And it's always all about sex toys, loops, robotics, AI, all of that. And I'm like, how about take a breath and feel into your body and notice what's there? What do you need? Like these things, it's always about a quick fix, how to feel a bit more, and never about what is it truly that's underneath. And that's what you can truly find in places more like, say, ISTA or Orgasmic Hypnosis with David Marius. And through real, personal, soft, no-goal-oriented connection. And it's really important to mention it here, because for a lot of women listening, it could be like, oh, shit, now I have to like make it my whole life's journey because there are so many things I need to do to be able to feel again. But that's, again, not what needs to happen. There is no pressure. There's just your body, and you can take your time, and you can take years and years and years in this reconnection, but it doesn't need to be, or it shouldn't feel like work. It's just a deep, beautiful reconnection.
And to your point about sex toys and all that, we're hearing so much about the orgasm gap, right? And there's a few reasons for this. And I could say it's the patriarchy, but then what, right? It's we need to, as women, advocate for our own pleasure. And we've been very passive. For example, the fact that I was perceived for the longest time as the most hypersexual person in my friend group and every circle, even though I'd never been able to experience partnered orgasm, goes to tell you a lot. I was still performing, right? People had this perception of me. And it's not to say I was very capable of staying in a highly aroused state, but I wasn't experiencing like true pleasure. And the pleasure that we are conditioned to is sympathetic pleasure, like quick, fast. So there's all this bullshit on the internet that we can't get addicted to our vibrators, and like it doesn't, they don't desensitize us. And this would drive me insane, because this is even what I was taught in my sexology training. And I was like, how is that the case? Because if I think about myself as a young girl, I would touch myself and like very quickly, within probably less than a minute, I would be able to orgasm. And then when I discovered sex toys, it was super profound for me and like electric. And then within like a few years, probably 4 or 5, I would be like using my Hitachi for like 10 minutes at the highest speed and feel nothing. I would go on detoxes for like, they say, you know, it takes a couple of days. I would try a week or 2 weeks, and it would hardly make a difference. So something interesting I learned in this embodied psychosexual training was that, you know, if we're using a vibrator, that's triggering an external sympathetic state. We, in no world, naturally, is that a familiar sensation on our genitals, right? It's not natural. That can't be co-created with a partner. So that's what we're training our bodies to respond to. And again, this cannot be co-created with a partner. So when we think of like how we perceive a lot of men that are like, you know, you should let us bring sex toys in the bedroom, you should let us bring our vibrator, blah, 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 we're bypassing intimacy there. We're bypassing connection and the what two people can co-create in that space. So it's like, you kind of wonder like, well, of course some men are going to be threatened and intimidated by sex toys, because that's that's keeping them further away from connection. So I very recently got rid of my dozens of vibrators, many of which I've been gifted or sent by various brands. And if you're capable of having both, great. I was not capable of having both. I'm on the path of like deconstructing what I've been accustomed to for so many years in order to build back up. But we shouldn't be afraid of going deep. And by going deep, you kind of got to deconstruct it. Like you said, slow it down. And as you know, with Tantra, if you've been accustomed to that high arousal, high sympathetic state, to enter relaxed arousal, which is really incredibly transformative on the other side, it takes some discomfort. And like, you're probably going to get a little bored. It's probably going to, you're going to feel desensitized, and you're going to slow it down, and it's going to be awkward and weird. But on the other side of that, it's profoundly transformative, and you've got to recondition yourself to get there. It's like having sex for the first time, really. And I think that's been the interesting thing is, you know, I like to use this analogy of like sex is like food. Sometimes you're eating McDonald's and other times you're having a Michelin star meal, right? And like, the McDonald's sex is nothing. The McDonald's is nothing like the Michelin star meal. Like the Michelin star meal, you're walking away and you're like, that was transformative. Like, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life. I feel amazing. Like, I'm going to keep sharing this. I want to tell people about how transformative it was and send people that way. And McDonald's, you're kind of basking in shame. And it like, it did that short term thing. It was like, oh, you craved it so bad. You got the fix. And then after, you're like, I feel kind of disgusting. So that's really what sex is. And not to say that also there's a place for quickies. There's a place for those, you know, short fixes. Absolutely. But let's look at our landscape, our erotic landscape, and see what else there is to offer, because there's so much available to us.
Yeah. And just like with McDonald's or really high quality, being Michelin star, being extremely beautifully home cooked, healthy meal, another similarity there is that the first one is easy and cheap to get. It doesn't require a lot of time to prepare. You can get it in seconds and for a very affordable price. It's not going to give you any health benefits. And the second one will give you deep health benefits and will really nourish you, but it does require a lot more effort, either to receive it from someone you love or to go and pay a good amount of money. But there is like this kind of effort space there as well. Before I switch to a different topic that I'm excited about, I want to know, what's your favorite sex toy now? And share a little bit about mine.
Favorite sex toy? Well, I have recently, like I said, I got rid of my Hitachi, my Magic Bullet, my Rose Butterfly, all of my vibrator. And what I've really been exploring, I have used a V-Well pelvic tool for my pelvic floor. But what I'm really exploring now and getting into like fully is just focusing on my jade egg to really create that sensitivity. And for me, that's because I am prone to numbing out. And interestingly, and I thought that might have been an anatomical issue. And I went to a gynecologist last week. She was actually involved in the training as well, Dr. Deborah Wickman. She's incredible. And it was so cool because I went in and she's like, well, do you have any concerns or issues? And I'm like, I'm kind of freaked out that I might have a hypertense pelvic floor because I'm not really feeling anything. Or I might have clitoral adhesions or something because like my clitoris is not as sensitive as it was. But I also know that this could all be in my head. You know, I'm just looking for clarity around that. And sure enough, she goes in there and this is what every gynecological exam should be. She goes in there with the camera on the screen. You're able to look at all of your anatomy. She's explaining it all to you. So you feel so empowered. That's the first step. You can look in a mirror, which most women will never do in a lifetime. But to go inside and look at your cervix and like look at what she calls your mermaid gills, like female prostate, and all of that, and see the functionality and your pleasure anatomy and your reproductive anatomy and how it all works is incredible. It's a really beautiful experience. And sure enough, nothing anatomically wrong with me. So that's when I was like, oh, yeah, okay. We've got to stay away from those quick fixes and the toys, which I've been accustomed to, because I need to go low and slow and really take in ritualizing my pleasure practice, which I've never God, and I really am a believer in ritualizing that. I think it's like really beautiful if you can wake up, you know, if you're a morning person like me, if you can wake up at like 5 a.m. or let's be honest, 4 a.m. these days, and take a couple hours or at the end of the day or whenever you can find that time, it's so beautiful because it's really meditative too. And you can bring in your other, you know, practices, whether that be your morning practice or meditation or, you know, Qigong to journaling and have that all be a part of it, then it's a really beautiful embodied way to enter the world.
Yeah, so good. I just had my pleasure practice today before this podcast. I often do it before recording podcasts and then I have a whole content day, like it's my thing. But how I do it, I have a ritual practice, like dark red silk piece that is symbolizing for me, like this is my ritual space. So I put like this big sheet of silk and then I put my jade egg, my cervical wand, because you've touched upon the cervix. I feel like it's so important to really mention women, you need to look into your cervix. So like my glass cervical wand, and then I put on music and I dance first and I seduce myself and then I cover myself in oil. Then the whole sheet becomes full of oil and I put myself in front of a mirror and then I like give myself a massage and like saying to me how I'm this goddess and look at this. And then I go into self-pleasure, into my genitals, into my breast massage. And then I get in myself to, and I don't use any vibrator. I get myself to an orgasm through self-touch using the hands or the glass wand. And that makes me feel super connected to my own like power. And I use that before work stuff because I know how that just makes me feel like I am myself and I'm connected. And I really hope more people get into that. It needs to be a ritual. It needs to be like a self honoring self-love deep practice. I didn't get here to speak to what you've said. It took me about maybe 2 years of real commitment to self-pleasure without any external vibrator stimulation or anything like that. It's a lot of practice, but I so love it now and I find so much power in it and I feel more. That's why we were disconnected from it, because there is so much power in it.
So it took you two years from deconditioning from using like vibrators, or what was the...
For me, it was more about shame. From a place of like, oh, I'm really ashamed to even put my hand down there. Maybe that was 7 years. But from a place of like, doing self-pleasure for 2 hours, who has time for it? Why would I do this? So boring. That's about 2 years.
So it's so interesting that you say that, because before I had my sexological bodywork session with Aaron Michael, who is an incredible bodyworker and sex coach, who was able to facilitate that heartgasm for me, is he said, what comes up for you? You know, what are your intentions here? And I'm like, honestly, like I just don't really feel anything. Like I just don't really feel anything. And I want to so bad. And I know this for a lot of, like, I was talking to my former adult star girlfriend, who's like a very well-known, like retired porn star. And she has the same thing. And I'm like, this is so hilarious. We're actually thinking about creating like a little docu-series on our journey to pleasure and resensitizing ourselves, because the assumption of what we are versus what we experience is just, and it's like, if we can solve this, then like anyone can. But he was like, so on the other side of boredom and numbness is curiosity and novelty. And that's certainly been my experience. And it's like on the other side of fear and anxiety is exuberance and joy. So it's like when through doing this work, I can correlate that exactly to the experience. You know, I was like fascinated. I was like, what else is here? You know, like, and that's where the peace like really comes from. And people think that novelty, I mean, the Western world conditions us to think like novelty is like different partners or like sexual gymnastics and aerobics and let's try reverse cowgirl and all these positions. And it's like, that could not be further from the truth. Trust me, as someone who's had all the sex with literally all the people, like, it's like, that's exactly what made me numb out. And the novelty, you know, I've experienced not only with myself as of recent, but like with partners now that I'm in the state, one partner in particular, because once you realize you know, what type of person you need to meet you on that level. It's like few and far between, right? Hopefully not for long. Hopefully we're sharing this and people are starting to rise to this work and become familiar with it. But you can't just have that with any. It really takes like profound connection and, you know, mutual respect and trust and curiosity and all of those things. But yeah, it's just, you can experience profound novelty energetically with the same partner. And that's what I really want to share with people too. Because, you know, we hear about desire discrepancy kicking in long-term relationships. And to that extent as well, there's this incredible book called The Anatomy of Desire that Emily Jamea wrote. And she talks about tapping into flow state in sex. And it's a really practical guidebook of like how to tap into flow state, how to emulate flow state, kind of coming off the heels of Peggy Kleinpatz's Magnificent Sex, which, you know, talks about the, was it 9 fundamentals that encompass magnificent sex? Because there's good sex, there's great sex, and then there's like that, like, what just happens? Like, and again, it's not about any positions you're doing or, you know, what the relationship is even really like outside that. It's they speak about, couples that experience that speak about like innate trust, you know, erotic like literacy, communication. It's the big piece that really stuck out for me that it wasn't, that no one mentioned love. It was like, it wasn't love at sight. It was like innate trust, like just being seen, which is the being seen element. So if I can share with more people and teach them how to tap into those energetic spaces, you know, with their partner, then that's what it's all about for me.
Daily practice is what truly transforms inspiration into embodiment. It is how this path moves from something you know to something you truly live. This is why we created Feel, a platform where you can access daily embodiment sessions, tantric meditations, and feminine energy and sexual energy activations to nourish your journey day by day. Join the Feel membership to start your practice and sign up for our newsletter to stay close to our offerings, our courses, events, and so much more. You'll find all the links in the episode description. This is one of my big fears about relationships growing up, and this is something I'm really happy to completely change now through this work and seeing the reflection in what you say, was this fear of like, oh, but everyone says love ends after 3 years, everyone gets bored of each other, sex gets boring, everybody's cheating and all of that. And through this work, through all that I can see in the tantric community, in these teachings, I can see that actually if you continue learning and growing and deepening, there is a whole lifetime of adventure that is there. It's just most people never really open that door. And that is incredible.
Yeah, totally. And that's similar to you. I mean, I think most of us are raised on that narrative, right? Like, oh, honeymoon stage, it fizzles off 3 years, then you're just putting up with each other. And I'm pretty sure you and I can attest to, mind you, I haven't been in a relationship longer than 3 years, and I started doing this work, like, you know, the embodied part, only a couple of years ago. But everyone in the community that I've met who are in committed relationships, I mean, the proof is right there. Like, you're witnessing it, right? Like, you don't see those kinds of connections with people that aren't doing that kind of work. And, you know, I think, you know, Tantra has a lot to do with that. I know that is a key factor. Even if you're not embodying all of Tantra practices militantly, like if you're able to tap into some of those love keys, then like you're really having that sustained attraction and connection. And that's really what I'm interested in partnership.
Yeah, it's like some there is a lot of like couple therapy. There is a lot of work around relationships, and people are very comfortable with an idea that relationships are work. But very often, most people are not comfortable with an idea that sex requires work or good sex requires work. They just think it's either it's there or once it's gone, it's gone. And not many people like, oh, it's actually something, this is something we should be investing our time into.
Yeah, it's so funny because if you talk to a lot of sex therapists, they'll talk about, you know, scheduling or planning sex. Say planning because scheduling sounds like, you know, you're at a corporate office, but planning sex. And I'm a firm believer in that too. And a lot of people have pushback on that. And it's like, why? You plan vacations, you know, you plan and date. So like, what's the difference? And I'll attest to this with my most profound sexual experience with a partner last year. He lived in a different city. We would plan to see each other when I'd be in town. So every couple weeks or every month. And it was all planning. And it was all like, let's try this. Let's explore this. Like, send each other articles. What do you think of this? You know, like, here's this embodiment practice that I want to try. And it was like so erotic to explore that together, to co-create that space together. And best sexual experience of my life, you know, even in and out of relationships. That was the best, most exploratory, most growth-inducing, expansive sexual experience I've ever had. And it was all planning. And then we'd even reflect on it after and be like, what was that like for you? Let's talk about that. Isn't it interesting that this comes up for us? And it was so fucking hot. Like, really, it was really hot, you know?
Yeah, and people fantasize about having amazing sex, and sometimes people inside marriages or committed relationships are really unhappy with their sexual life, and then they fantasize about amazing experiences they could have had if they didn't have this relationship. But very few people are actually able to admit that I deserve great sex and I could actually work on it. Most of us run away from it because there's so much stigma, shame, miseducation, miscommunication, while... there's so much possibility there. And with that, I know a lot of women who listen to this podcast, they might already be aware of possible personal practices of how to awaken pleasure. But most struggle, especially women who come to our events, with a question of like, oh, but how do I invite my man into it? Oh, I told my man about it and he's like intimidated, or he feels like it's not for him, and like, now I'm all on my own on this path. It's a very common story. And since you also, a lot of your work is around men, I would love to hear your opinion.
Yeah, so I feel that the best approach and that I've seen work is really, first of all, to lead by example. So it's like, if you have brought it up, and never bring it up out of threat, never bring it out of a you're lesser than or I'm not getting what I want. Be the muse, inspire him, right? And be excited to share with him, you know, what you've been experiencing as you embark on this practice. And what I found that really works well is like appealing to their highest sense of self. So of course, if you're in a relationship with a man, I assume at some point or at certain points, there's been things that have really turned you on, things that have really worked. So point those out in your path to inspiring him. Be like, you know, or be like, you know what I really want to try? Men are curious people. The novelty comes in the curiosity. So if you kind of gamify it in a way that's like experimental and fun and like, let's be playful about it and not so intense about it, that's the best approach. It's not an either or, it's like a both and. And it's like, yeah, if he still wants to go to Pound Town or like, you know, just wants to have like a quick like blowjob in the morning too, and then you also explore that, you can do both, right? It's not like you have to just go down this path and nothing else is acceptable. So I think like really being gentle about how you approach it, definitely like appealing to their ego to start and validating them and like what has worked in the past and making it as playful as possible and like setting aside time to like, let's try this, or, you know, talk about other positive experiences that you've witnessed, whether that's a friend, whether that's in a course you've taken or something you watched or something you read, and like share that with him so he's part of that and he can kind of be inspired to enter that space. So we'll say as well is there has been the like occasionally where a man will not want to do that under any circumstances. And then, you know, I have women ask the question like, okay, well, where else is that coming up in the relationship? Where else are your needs not being met? And 100% of the time, it's like they're not accepting their emotions. They're not amenable to, you know, their other passions. And then it's like, then why are you in that relationship? So like, if it's that much fight, if it's causing that much pushback and it's that painful and it's just a hard no, not like a discomfort around it, then I would, you know, implore you to like question why you're in that relationship.
What kind of mistakes can women usually do in this kind of communication?
I've made them. So like, definitely, you know, any sort of emasculating comment, whether if it's sexual inactivity, then, you know, diagnosing them, whether it's like ED or premature ejaculation, and like getting frustrated with them, or saying they have a Madonna whore complex. Oops, I've done that before. Things like that are not going to help, right? Those are for the professionals. Those are not for you. You're here to inspire. So, and also don't come at him or don't address these things in a charged environment. So if you're arguing about something, don't throw sex in that same argument. Don't conflate the two. Keep those things mutually exclusive. It's important to talk about this outside of the bedroom, not like while you're going to bed at night, like we never have sex anymore, or you never want to try new things, or you only want to have sex one way. That's really emasculating. That's going to make him shut down completely. So yeah, start to address that, you know, when things are already on a high, if you can.
And what are ways to really inspire him? Anything spicy or anything from your experience that you can share?
Well, so I work predominantly with like men on their own, men who come to me aside from their partners. Many of them are single looking to get partnered. And what we are blessed with in this time of like biohacking, Andrew Huberman disciples, men who have this like hyper fixed growth mindset, is luckily, surprise, surprise, they also want to become masters at sex. And so if you lead with that, which is really interesting, because women, if you like critique them in any way, or if you make them feel like they haven't perfected something yet, they're like, that's it. They shut down. They're like, what? I'm not good. I'm not already there. I'm not good at it already. Like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know unless I'm already perfect at it. I don't want to hear feedback. Men are like, what can I do that's better? How can I optimize my sexual health? How can I optimize my skills? So that's what I mean, I love men for this. I love especially like millennial and Gen Z men. That is like what they're about. They're super exploratory. I'm developing a program right now about it has like various pillars, so biosexual, spiritual, sexual, and it all pertains to your sexuality. So how can you optimize your hormone health? What are the embodiment practices? What are the, you know, longevity practices? And the same things to combat ED are the same for premature ejaculation. And it's about those embodiment, you know, exercises and sexual reflexology exercises, as well as skills, you know, with women. If you inspire him and say, do you want to become like a master at sex? Like, of course they're going to say yes, right? So it's finding those like side door ways to approach them. Send them my content. Like, leave it up on the computer. That'll totally inspire them. Like, there's things like, you know, men are usually just thrusting, and they're also really hard. They're not relaxed. Their backs are like flat, you know, and they're going like, again, friction sex. So if they learn to like really like move their hips with your hips, and there's like exercises to do there along with like twerking, because twerking is going to activate the urethral sponge. So if they're twerking like that, that's them twerking. So rotating between thrusting, and then that can make a woman squirt. So if you tell them stuff like that, they're going to be like, what? You know, and this stuff really, yeah. And it's like, you know, you were just saying like, oh, when I first started doing eight egg, it was like, oh, 2 hours in the morning, boring. How many guys go to the gym for 2 hours in the morning? Like, most of them that I know. So like, interesting, because I find them a lot easier to work with than women, because women have a lot more to unpack. It takes us a lot longer. It's certainly taken me a lot longer. It continues to, but men have, generally speaking, in this generation, and in, you know, Gen Z generation, they're a lot more looking to like, they're seekers. The growth mindset thing is very real. Like, look at all the podcasts that they're listening to. They're constantly trying to get better. So you can really optimize that mindset. Yeah. So if we think about how men first started masturbating, you know, it was really quick, really fast. Why? because they were afraid of someone walking. So when they're little boys and they first discover it, it's like, I need to do this as quick as possible because mom might walk in and blah, 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 blah. And again, that's that sympathetic nervous state. So when they masturbate, that's what they're doing. They're touching themselves one way. And then as they get older, they only learn to be pleasured one way, and they experience desensitization too. So it's like they've got to go hard, they've got to do it this way, and nothing else works. So very similar to women, they have to slow it down and do their own embodiment practices. Things like kidney breathing are really good for activating the pelvis. It's all in the pelvis too. Like there's, you know, as long as like exhale, push breaths. Men love breath work. You know, if they're doing an exhale, push breath with their kidney breathing in the morning, same with like cupping their balls and then rubbing their heart, activating that center. And then there's various exercises. I'm going to be doing a post on that and some videos I'm going to release in the next couple of weeks on what those are. But then also fundamentally try exploring their bodies in different ways. So like try slowing it down, try touching themselves in different places, because when we're with partners, we're not doing the same things that we do to pleasure ourselves. Like, you know, I'm not rubbing my clitoris or my partner's not doing, I wouldn't want that. First of all, that's not fun. Like that's not the experience. And like a guy doesn't just want a woman to do that and then like, okay, good night. But like, no. So try pleasuring yourself in a way that you would want with a partner, a way that a partner explores. You explore your own body in that way. And, you know, porn, let's talk about that because that's also a big piece. I don't believe, you know, I'm pretty porn neutral. I'm friends with a lot of people in that space. I think it's like we need to put more responsibility on the individuals and not the porn itself, right? There's a lot of accountability to be had. But I'm not a believer in like sex addiction or porn addiction. It's like, just take some accountability here. But there's things you can do to do that. So, you know, with these practices, and I highly suggest taking Aaron Michaels' YAFAP program, not NoFAP, YAFAP, because he teaches a lot of these exercises as well. I believe it's a 21-day program. And I've referred men to that well in conjunction while working with me as well, which is a fantastic combo. But instead of just like going cold turkey off of porn, like try just turning the screen away and listening to it, but adding on one of these practices, right? So it's like you don't have men have still this shame around like must do NoFAP, semen retention can't come, blah, 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 hyperfixation and like, you know, avoid pleasure. What if you could enter that state of relaxed arousal and really cultivate that energy, have it stay in you, right? And then play with those activations. So like I said, just listening to porn instead of watching it too. Don't feel like you need to go the cold turkey off it. Just play with those activations and triggers.
Very similar still actually to an approach with women. It's all about training and retraining and reconditioning ourselves. And it's beautiful to notice that there are a lot of pleasure and a lot of potential in sexuality. So obvious, but people forget, comes from the body, right? So just like we want to be fit and to want to be able to walk easily and run easily with pleasure, with strong back, we need to train for it. Do Pilates, yoga, gym, whatever works. Same for sex. We actually need to train to breathe, to stay present, to move, all of that. Some obvious things, but not so common to know these days.
Yeah, and you know, the breathing thing is, that's been a big challenge for me too, right? Because also we're having tension-based orgasms for so long, which is, what do? We tighten, we convulse, we hold our breath. And relaxed arousal for the ability to have multiple orgasms, various types of different orgasms, that expansive connection, it's like all about activating that pelvic floor, exhale, push, and like pushing out, right? And making those deeper sound, wow, like those like grunts and those things that are good for your, like, you know, the bagel toning. So it's not what we've been taught. And that's what I'll also say, that of course, porn is insidious there. I'm also going to cut men some slack because similar to how I said they were conditioned in masturbation, like afraid of mom walking in the room so quick and fast. If I think about when I was like in eighth grade and, you know, first starting to get intimate with men, and I remember being in the parking lot and like my other, this is embarrassing because it's like, what do eighth grades know about giving blow? But I'm asking like the other eighth, ninth graders, like how to do that. And they're like teaching me on a banana. The girls are and teach same with how to kiss. It's like, here, practice on your hand. This is what you do. Girls did that. Boys never did that. There was like, that was like gay, you know, shame. So it's like just going straight to porn. Like, so we can't really blame them for that because we were complicit in that as well. Like there was none of the men are asking like the boys in the ninth grade locker room, like how to pleasure a woman, right? But we're doing that from a young age of how to pleasure me. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, the shame plays a big role in this disconnection. A lot of different kind of shame, but there is a lot of shame that actually prevents us from learning and learning real things. So I hope now is so much more information out there. People can really reconnect to this important part of their lives that's so meaningful. And with that, like, would you share with us how are you finding the connection to your spiritual evolvement and growth?
It's been pretty profound. Like I said, I did not expect that to happen from my initial just curiosity around sex. It started with me being like, why am I aroused by these things? Why do I like eroticize anxiety? And then I went deeper into that. And then that led me, like I said, to Tantra. And I mean, my spirituality is pretty multidimensional. I pull from various modalities and it's like very much so my ability to be in touch with the universe and trust the universe. And then I also am very inspired by like Mary Magdalene and that archetype, right? So the big thing for me, and I think that is important for anyone's spirituality, is I think it's really cool to piecemeal it together. What works for you from over here? What works for you from over there? And I remember I had my first energetic orgasm coming out of some journey work that I was doing. It was the next day, so I was not under the influence anymore, but I was very heart opened. And I was in the midst of a meditative practice, and I'm still very new to meditation, so stillness is hard for me, but I was in a very zen state then, and I was out in nature, and I just felt really, really at one with the universe in that moment, and I just felt this like complete love, like just complete love, and I had this like rupturous energetic orgasm. And that's when I was like, and it was like psychedelic. You know, I didn't touch myself. And as I started sharing that experience more, I didn't share it for a while because I was like, what the hell was that? Like, did I imagine that? And then I started sharing it. And it's interesting how many more people, especially in this space, had something similar. And that's what kind of led them here. They're like, it was like this magic moment that taught us that something else is at play here beyond our limiting beliefs and the physical world of what we're told. And so I think, you know, my spirituality really comes from within and realizing like the potential that I have within to like co-create with the universe.
There is a lot that just comes from within intuitively once we connect to the body and to our sex. This is a creative sexual energy that is the creation life force. And it's, again, something people tend to forget. Those who have still a little bit of shame to work through, and because society teaches us exactly that. But I love that a lot of people go, like when you mentioned Tantra, for example, a lot of people go to Tantra for tantric sex, but then they find so much more there that is actually just a little door. Like curiosity for sex is just a little door into a much bigger world that has so much to offer. Starting with acceptance and presence.
Yeah. And I think if I can tell, you know, anyone that it's real, you know, because again, like a couple of years ago, I would roll my eyes at anyone that brought up the word Tantra. And I was like a hypersexual, very curious, like I was already a sexologist, right? And I would still roll my eyes at like yoni egg and body like Tantra. And then ironically, you know, through my own journey, I've done a 180 into like, oh my God, this is the key. This is the key to all of it. So you know, I would just encourage anyone who is curious about that. I think if they're watching this, then they're probably on a similar trajectory, that something somewhere inspired them, that there's something more to all of this, right? And to follow that curiosity, and on the other side of that is like a portal to everything in life, and like tantra and sex and being at one with our, you know, sexually sovereign selves, is going to be transformative for every aspect of life. I'm still experiencing that on a daily basis. It's like things keep happening, magic moments keep happening, the deeper I feel connected with myself. That comes from like our sexual sovereignty, because that's our sovereignty. If we can, doing this work sexually is kind of the deep, it is not kind of, it is the deepest form of work we can do on ourselves. That's, it's literally stripped down, the most raw, real, you know, no pun intended, unfiltered work we can do. So when you get real with yourself there, you're getting real with your entire life.
This is a powerful way to finish this podcast.
Yeah,
like that's the quote. Oh. That was Coral Osborne. You can find her details and follow her on Instagram by finding the details in this episode description. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating. It really helps the show and helps us sharing our work with women worldwide.